Hugh and Review, celebrating 40 years of audio production, welcomes you to this week's edition of the Glasgow Times Sports Podcast, recorded from our studio in the Bishopriggs Media Centre and by our volunteers working from home. Keep up to date with Q and Review news via our Facebook, Twitter or Instagram at Q and Review, that's @CUEANDREVIEW, or get in touch with us directly by emailing information@qandreview.com, that's INFORMATION @CUEANDREVIEW.com, or by calling 0141 772 3976. Please like and share our podcast and give us constructive feedback.
From the Evening Times, published on the 5th of December 2023, Cantwell shows he's best man for Rangers' number 10 job. Weekend performance highlights midfielder's influence in central position. An article by Joshua Barry, football writer. Todd Cantwell had no interest in celebrating with his teammates during the immediate aftermath of the Abdallah Simmers opener against St Mirren yesterday, even if it was a moment he had created. Rangers number 13 instead let out a roar in front of the Broomloan, venting a blend of relief and frustration. Cantwell was under the spotlight, having been substituted inside the first half by Philippe Conlon against Aris that midweek and beginning to grow irate at the kicks and bruises, stunting any momentum. Perhaps an outburst or two in the direction of the referee was also provoked by his team's tempo or lack thereof. Yesterday's 2-0 win against St Mirren did not see the best version of Rangers, and nor did it witness Cantwell in full swing, despite providing the two goals Simmer would seal all 3 points from. But that alone tells its own story. The creative midfielder was still able to provide much-altering moments and grow as spaces opened up. Cantwell is at his best when at the very heart of the action, and most importantly, his team always looks better for it too. On Thursday night, he was being withdrawn before the half-time interval for disobeying his manager's instructions, but days later, the only reason Cantwell left the pitch before the final whistle was to enjoy the acclaim from the fans. It was a clever act of symmetry from Clement. While a first-half substitution will always prove a big talking point, Clement's post-match comments were glossed over in the aftermath of Thursday's frustrations. The Belgian admitted that his instructions had not been carried out by Cantwell, while also reiterating that they had been up until now. Sunday is a new game, he added. I'm sure he will react positively. A successful Rangers manager must have the authority to make decisions the crowd do not like, and taking Cantwell off while keeping Sam Lammers in his favoured position was an example of just that. After all, what is the line between disobeying instructions and the natural inclinations of your game taking over? Cantwell is a player who is designed to move towards the ball, the one who should be benefiting from space, not creating it. With frustration not to be expected leaving the pitch, the 25-year-old has been playing out of his optimal position for weeks while doing a job for the team that failed to maximise his abilities. If supporters have been unfulfilled by his fluctuating levels throughout the season, you can guarantee Cantwell will have been too. This has not been a season where everything has gone his way. The Norwich City Academy product has suffered from being misunderstood throughout his career. In an interview with the Rangers Review, his youth coach at Carrow Road, Jimmy Unwin, spoke of the Englishman as a maverick. He is flashy, he is one of those who wears rubbish clothes, in my opinion, and he is eccentric, but like, so what? He's a maverick and he wants to be different. I love that he's brave enough to do that, because he's so eccentric. He never missed an opportunity to showcase his talents. That's what I loved about the boy. It was telling that Cantwell's reaction to that Aris substitution was dialed in on instead of the number of games prior where he'd followed protocol, as Clement also suggested. After a 1-1 between the pair in midweek, the position position wide on the right was fulfilled by the increasingly impressive Ross McCausland against St Mirren as Cantwell moved infield. Our role on the right was limiting the 25-year-old's influence, and this side is not good enough to live without much such an impact. Rangers lack not only the technical qualities brought in by in that position, but miss Cantwell's personality and ownership. Cantwell is a reactive dribbler who's better at solving problems in tight spaces, not isolated in open yards. In an interview with The Athletic, he summarised, "I always base my touches off what defenders think I'm going to do. Dribbling is essentially moving while protecting the ball, keeping the ball close. I never really knock it and run as such because I feel like you lose a bit of the control." If able to move infield and face the play from the right, his creative qualities could still shine. And if glued to the touchline, as in midweek, the dynamic didn't feel suited to Cantwell's best attributes. Perhaps most importantly for Cantwell's dribbling style, in playing on his strong side, there's no other leg to protect the ball and ride challenges. It's easier for a defender to poke the ball away as opposed to a similar carry from the left. Cantwell can lose control in these situations when forced to take a touch away from the defender and can often then be playing catch-up before losing it. Football rhetoric can become caught up in rigid positions that are too binary for the modern game. Indeed, this very writer argued just months ago that Cantwell's role deep in the pitch against Servette busted the myth without his best position. Does Cantwell have a binary best position? Maybe. Does he have a best role in this Rangers team? Yes, and it's right at the heart of proceedings. Beale's system featured two free midfield roles, and in a slower-paced style, a spot deeper in the pitch enabled Cantwell to dictate play deep before joining the attack. In Clement's more positionally set system, with wingers often instructed to stay wide, the prime spot for Cantwell is at number 10. Just as we saw under Beale, the Englishman can prove his most effective when afforded license to drop deep or stay high, especially with a lack of incisive passers deep in the pitch. It was movement across the pitch that worked against Cantwell in midweek. Yesterday's second assist demonstrated exactly why better angles and greater freedom for Cantwell benefit the team. It was a moment that summarised his game perfectly. As John Lindstrom played the ball out of defence, it was Cantwell who was in hand to receive the pass. Cantwell is so much more comfortable taking the ball on his left and pushing into his right as opposed to the alternative, basing his touch off the defender instead of dribbling proactively with the ability to ride challenges and move onto his right, playing with his heads up. Having broken the first line of pressure, he could then pick out the angled run of Sima from deep to seal the 3 points. Now, aided by the emergence of Ross McCausland, who thoroughly deserves to make the right-sided spot his own, this should be the start of Cantwell's playing regularly in his favoured role. Rangers are not good enough to leave who is likely their best player out of his position. Far from bowing to player power, Clement has managed the back end of the situation well. This is the reality of taking over mid-season with a squad of players not built to play with wingers. There must be compromise somewhere. If Rangers are to hand anyone the freedom and responsibility associated with the number 10 shirt, however, it's Cantwell. That, as we said, was an article by Joshua Barry, football writer. This is Alistair standing in for Bill. From the Evening Times, published on the 5th of December 2023. Clark, reset put us on the right road to Germany. National manager used World Cup playoff pain to freshen things up. An article by Johnny McFarlane, football writer. Steve Clark tasted the pain of a World Cup playoff defeat against Ukraine and decided it was time for a Scotland reset. He had watched the nation's hopes being dashed not with a mighty effort but a meek 3-1 collapse at Hampden. To be fair, it was a rare off night for his charges, whose work since taking over has made the Ayrshireman the most successful national team manager in decades. The result meant he was not going to add a World Cup qualification to his record, and things would have to change to get to the next European Championships in Germany. and change they did. Scotland swept through a tough-looking group that included Spain, Norway and Georgia with a ruthless efficiency that felt out of kilter with what 30 years of football had previously taught us about the national side. Looking back, Clark can see that the road to Germany began with the World Cup sorrow. That was a night when we didn't play to our potential, he reflected. That was the bottom line on that night. Now, whether we allowed the circumstances to override our concentration on the game, I don't know, but we certainly didn't play as well as we could have played. We deservedly lost that night. After a home win, we then went to Dublin, and it was clear we hadn't really recovered because we didn't turn up. We were really poor. We got them all together at the end of August and just said we had to reset and go again. I sat with my extended staff and we had a big chat about how we could help the players. We decided to change the environment a little bit. We changed the shape of the team for the next game, just to do something different and freshen it up. And obviously it worked quite well for us. And it wasn't just the tactics and shape that changed, with Scotland moving training camp, departing from the Orium National Performance Centre in Edinburgh, and moving to the newly refurbished Lesser Hampden. It was another step in the process of resetting and saying, we will do something different, admits Clark. It is important because you have to understand that we are working on a really broad spectrum, and I will use Motherwell as an example. So, from Motherwell to Liverpool. Fair play to the boys that are playing in the English Premier League because they don't crack the whip and say we get this at Liverpool, we get this at Man United, we get this at Aston Villa. They understand that you are trying to push as much as you can within the means that the Scottish FA have got, but what they shouldn't be doing is coming into camp and thinking, oh, this is a bit of a letdown. They should be coming into camp knowing the Scottish FA have done as much as possible to make them feel as comfortable as possible. And for people like Liam Kelly at Motherwell and the Hearts boys, they should be coming in and saying, this is brilliant, I love this. Orium was the venue that I was asked to use. It was fine, basically. Initially, it was perfect, it served its purpose. We had some really good camps at the Orium, some great results, some great moments. We made the best of those facilities and we made them work. But after some time you think, okay, this is a little bit tired. We are a bit tired of this place and we need to change. To be fair to the board, as soon as I began to ask for change, they were on it. They understood what I was trying to say to them. Just to freshen up, to try to improve the facilities a little bit, and move closer to the top level of facility. Scotland having a bespoke training centre is ultimately where the SFA want to get to, but it's clear that such a development would have to come on the back of more sustained success. While Scotland have now qualified for two of the last three big international tournaments, more will have to come to see that dream come to fruition. Clark said, unfortunately, we don't have our own base in Scotland, so I have to find something, and at the moment, the Blythewood in Lesser Hampden is a fantastic option. But I won't stop looking and I won't stop pushing for something else because I want to keep moving and moving. I say it to the board all of the time, never stop trying to improve and never stop trying to look for something that eventually, hopefully, can become a Scottish FA facility. That would be nice, but being realistic, two tournament qualifications in 25 years is not going to help us. But you would need to look at another two or three, or three out of the next four, or three out of the next five, a constant extra revenue coming into the association, and maybe then they can think about it. While Orium now looks certain to be part of the nation's team's past, Clark isn't one to suggest the taxpayer-funded complex didn't serve a purpose. He said, when I came up, I looked at the facilities and I knew that senior players had looked at them and decided that the Wi-Fi was good, the beds were nice and they could get a bath after training, so they were reasonably happy. Listen, there were some really good bits at the Orium, the after-training bits where you come off the pitch and you go into the dressing room area. There was a swimming pool and a spa facility, so there were good bits that the players enjoyed. At the time we moved there, it was probably a step forward in my eyes. Maybe it was a small step, but it was a step forward. And that's what we've done again is take a bigger step forward, this time because the facilities we use at Lesser Hamden are working really well for us. So we have moved forward, and that's the process to try and move forward again eventually. The article was by John McFarlane, as we said, who's a football writer. This is Alistair standing in for Bill. From the Evening Times, published on the 5th of the 12th, 2023. Group A 1, Scotland versus England. Corsi, it's insulting to suggest Scots won't go all out for the win. An article by Alison McConnell. Pedro Martinez Losa and Rachel Corsi, the Scotland manager and captain respectively, were both indignant ahead of this evening's inconclusive Nations League game against England at Hampden, that their minds are focused on anything other than securing a positive result. Regardless of how immaterial the outcome is for them, the 1-1 draw with Belgium on Friday evening was confirmed Scotland's status as relegation fodder in Group A1 as they prepare to slide into Group B. That has led to suggestions that Martinez Losa's side are compromised tonight, given the complexities around England, who are currently charged with securing Team GB's position at this summer's Paris Olympics. Both England and the Netherlands are tied on 9 points and have identical head-to-head records. If the Dutch, who host Belgium, and England both win, then it will come down to goal difference, with the Dutch currently enjoying a 3-goal advantage. Even if Belgium beat the Dutch, England would still need to beat Scotland to ensure qualification. Scotland players are eligible for Team GB selection, although there is a question mark over whether any would be picked, as only two, Kim Little and Caroline Weir, made it to the last Olympics. In all honesty, truthfully, I think it is so disrespectful, said Corsa of the theories that have circulated this weekend. To have played for my country for as many years that I have, to know the girls who sit in there, to know the ones who want to be here and the ones who are injured and can't be here, it is outrageous to question anyone's integrity. It is a huge insult to us. It is a huge insult to us. It is a game that we absolutely look forward to. Martinez Losa was equally vocal about his thoughts on the matter. I don't feel happy about the questioning of the integrity of the Scottish players, he said. Scotland is a wonderful country with wonderful people. They are very passionate about everything, and nobody for one second should question the integrity of the players and how much they want to represent their nation. Our motivation is our fans to play good football, to beat England and to improve the aspects we have to improve as a team. This is something we couldn't affect in this part of the competition. We've been trying to stay away from that. There is no conversation to have. My opinion of the question of the integrity is very negative. And everyone who knows me, the players, the team, knows how strong the feeling is for players to come and represent their country. Martinez Losa's side have taken just 2 points from the group, but the belief among the squad is that the exposure to elite teams should serve them well when they kick off their European Championships again campaign next year. Our position within the group is difficult because it is not where we want to be, but at the same time we have the opportunity to finish the year against a team who is one of the best, said Corsi. There is a huge rivalry, and to get the chance to play them here at Hampden Park is one that everyone is relishing. Apart from the Netherlands away, I think there have been positives in every game. It has been a tough group, but we knew that. The girls are frustrated because we felt we deserved more from Friday night, but the margins are tight. But this game takes care of itself. It would be brilliant to get a positive result. It would help the group as we have more younger players coming through, and they stand to gain the most from that little bit of confidence it would give us. It would be great to finish the year without a win, even if it doesn't change the group standings. A positive result would be a good way for us to go into next year. There will be a lot of tough games again, games of this calibre. The article, as we said, was by Alison McConnell. Wiegmann insists there is no way hosts will give game away. England head coach Serena Wiegmann has stressed there is no way Scotland are going to give away the game when the sides meet at Hampden Park on Tuesday in their final Nations League group fixture. The second place Lionesses may need a high-scoring win against the already relegated Scots to claim top spot in the group, the finish required to keep Wiegmann's team in contention to secure Paris 2024 Olympic qualification for Great Britain. With England's success on that front, the only way Scottish players will be able to play at the Games, Andreas Jonker, head coach of group leaders the Netherlands, described the situation as strange after England's 3-2 win over the Dutch on Friday. Wiegmann said, "I understand the conversations about it, but if you've seen our group, seen Scotland and know the history of Scotland and England, then there's no way that they are going to give away this game. They really want to beat England. We want to beat them, of course. I don't have the solution. This is the first time we've played the Nations League, and how are you going to solve this situation? Maybe you don't want them in the same group, but then if Scotland topped another group, we topped one and we went into the finals, you'd have the same situation. It's just about fair play, about football, and in football everyone wants to win. And we know the rivalry. We have professional players here who really want to show up, England players and Scottish players. I think it's going to be a good game." England midfielder Kira Walsh said, "Nobody is questioning the professionalism of this game. They've got some top players, so do we, and we both want to win. I don't think it's a case of they'll be thinking about anything else. I think we both want to play a good game and hopefully win." While England and the Netherlands, each on 9 points from 5 games, are locked on head-to-head record, the latter have a goal difference that is superior by 3. The Dutch host a Belgium outfit who lie a point behind in third. Wiegmann said of our players, "You don't want to be erratic. We want to be controlled. We really want to play our best game and create chances. Get a lot of players up front, but do the right things. Make the right choices. Stay calm at all moments and score as a team. And again, then don't concede any." England battled back to triumph on Friday after being 2-0 down at half-time, with a second Dutch goal coming when Mary Earps got a glove to Lineth Bierenstein's shot but could not stop it crossing the line. Earps afterwards said she had let the team down. But Wiegmann then said was not the case. Walsh added, "Mary has saved us in so many situations. For me, she's always been there in the big moments for us, so she really doesn't need to take that on herself. Mary's delivered below, so I'm pretty sure she will win again." The article was by Alison McConnell. This is Alistair sitting in for Bill.
This is from the Glasgow Times on Wednesday, the 6th of December, 2023, from the sports section. From Shettleston to becoming one of the world's top pool players. Article by Susan Egglestaff, sports writer. It's a long way from Shettleston to Connecticut. Over 3,000 miles to be exact. The journey from Glasgow's East End to the East Coast of the United States has been far from smooth for Jason Shaw. But it's one that has seen him go from a kid who, by his own admission, was more than a little off the rails, to one of the world's best pool players with hundreds of thousands of followers on social media, earning hundreds of thousands of dollars, as well as being lauded by the world's biggest podcaster, Joe Rogan. It's quite a transformation for the 35-year-old Scot. Shaw was, from his very earliest days, destined to be a pool player. His father was a professional in the game and bought him a toy pool table at the age of only 4. And with a snooker table also in their house in Shettleston, Shaw had a cue in his hand almost as soon as he could walk. However, at the age of 9, Shaw's elder brother died in a tragic accident, and from there, he recalls, he began to go right off the rails. After a decline in his academic performance at school, he returned home one day to find the snooker table gone from his home, leaving him somewhat perplexed, until he looked out into the back garden, that is. "My dad had thrown the snooker table onto the bonfire, and so there it was, burning away," Shaw recalls. "I was quite off the rails at that point. It was obviously tough when my brother died, and at only 10 years old, I was drinking and skipping school. I wasn't in a good place, so my dad said that when I started doing better at school, we could get a new snooker table. There was, ultimately, one thing that got him back on the straight and narrow. Pool. By his early teens,
he'd thrown himself into the sport and was already one of the most promising young players in Britain. And there was one event in particular, Shaw recalls, that was his breakthrough moment. My first pro event was in Jersey, and I played my dad in the second round. I'd played him in tournaments before, but because he'd always had a good shot at winning them, I'd let him go through, he says. But this time, he said he thought we should play properly, and I ended up beating him. It was a really big breakthrough for me, because I ended up winning that tournament. That was him passing the baton on to me, and it all took off from there. While still in his teens, Shaw was singled out by a number of benefactors and supporters who funded him to initially travel to London for tournaments, then to the USA, where he began to really take strides forward. It was in 2010, as a 21-year-old, when he became a World 8-Ball champion, however, that he began to really make his mark on the game. Regular trips from his home in Glasgow across the pond to the US in the subsequent years following that world title ultimately saw him relocate permanently to America, where he's now married with two kids, and he admits his current life in Connecticut feels like a different world from his humble beginnings. When I think back to growing up, my life is so different now. There's people I knew growing up who are now dead, or they're junkies, or they're in and out of jail, he says. When I was young, I'd get slagged off for going to play pool rather than going to the pub, but I really believe it's pool that saved me from a life like that. If I hadn't got into pool, I'd have been getting up to no good, I think. And it's a slippery slope, so you never know where you'll end up. Shaw has, over the past decade, established himself as one of the very best nine-ball players on the planet, and perhaps ever. A raft of tournament victories, including his most recent at the Hanoi Open in October, have been racked up, but perhaps his most notable achievement in recent times was last year's world high run record. After literally days of failed attempts, Shaw finally set a new world record of potting 714 balls. It was, he admits, a severe test of his ability, and is a record that, he believes, will remain in his possession for quite some time. Nobody else will beat that record. It took me 5 days, playing for 14 hours straight. I was only sleeping for about 4 hours, he says. When I'm ready, I'll go for it again. I believe I can get to 1,000, because when you're in that room doing it, it's only you and one other guy keeping count, so you can really get into the zone with no distractions. Shaw will, he says, attempt once again to extend his record further in due course, but his immediate focus now lies on the Moscone Cup, which begins today in London. The tournament sees Europe take on the USA in a Ryder Cup-style format, and it's an event Shaw has become something of a regular in, having already been part of Europe's winning team 5 times. And with the atmosphere more akin to a football match than anything else, it's an environment that Shaw is well suited to, as he attempts to add a 6th Moscone Cup title to his record. It's so rowdy, it's nuts! There's 3,000 people in the crowd who've all been in the pub for quite a few hours before play starts, so it's a crazy environment, he says. But I love that. I grew up playing in pubs in Glasgow, where there'd be a load of old guys behind you, steaming, shouting abuse, so it was a good preparation. I'm feeling good and I'm playing well at the moment. I've won a few tournaments this season, and towards the end of the year, I always tend to come alive, so I'm really looking forward to the Moscone Cup, because I'm always up for it. That article was by Susan Egglestaff. This is from the Glasgow Times, on Wednesday, the 6th of December, 2023, from the sports section. Matt O'Reilly on keeping playfulness in Celtic armoury. Article by Ewan Payton, sports writer. Matt O'Reilly may not be young, wild and free anymore. However, it's part of his mentality when playing the game that keeps him sane. Playing at a big club like Celtic presents its own pressures, but players know what they're signing up for when the Scottish champions come calling. Aside from playing in Glasgow, as an adult, naturally, the pressures of life get tougher. That's why the new Full Denmark international likes to remain young in his mind, often reminding himself of what it used to be like growing up as a teenager, playing football in parks. It may sound a bit daft, but if his form this season keeps up, with 7 goals and 7 assists to date ahead of tonight's match against Hibernian, then whatever works for O'Reilly should be embraced. Asked about his stunning finish against St Johnson, the attacking midfielder explained, "I remember a volley with my right foot against Reading for Fulham under 14s or 15s. That's the other one I remember. Other than that, it's hard. It's such a long time ago, it's hard to really think about it. In terms of professional football, Sunday was the nicest with my right. Back then, there were fewer fans. On Sunday, there was slightly more pressure. People tend to put more pressure on you as you get older in life, for some reason. That's just how it goes. I think when you're a kid of 14 or 15, you play very freely. That's how I'm trying to play at the moment, to bring that side of young, childish playfulness into my game. Maybe last season I wouldn't have even thought to swing my right foot at that. Now it's just a case of being more free on the pitch, which is nice. It's nice that the manager trusts me. I think that's quite important. I'm obviously playing a lot of football at the moment, which is really nice. My body is in a good place as a result of the momentum of the amount of games I'm playing. I think naturally, when I'm on the pitch, because of the consistency of games, I'm also able to maybe risk even more at the moment, which is what I'm trying to do. I think there's a lot of deep work, to be honest, that goes on with myself mainly off the pitch. Speaking through things, just sitting by myself and processing everything. That takes a lot of time and practice to be able to actually get to the stage where I'm a little bit more carefree on the pitch about what's happening. Of course, I go into every game wanting to win, but I feel like when I'm on the pitch, all I'm thinking about is just winning in the game. That's just another thought or distraction in my head. So I try to go in as open-minded as possible. As a result, usually, you've got a better chance of winning. I was probably overthinking things more up to until I was 17, 18, 19 years old. I think it was all done with good intentions. It was about standards and hard work, trying to get better from a young age. I was always dreaming from a young age. It's not that the dreams have stopped, but it's about taking things as they come, rather than overthinking things that are out of my control. O'Reilly has candidly opened up about speaking to his life coach and friend Dish from India previously. It's also methods such as meditation that have helped him cope with the mental side of the game. He's been at Celtic for nearly 2 years now. Hard to believe how quickly that time has flown by. And he insists he will make a continuous effort to help any of the club's newer players if they're struggling to cope. Thoughts that are negative, positive, doubts, whatever, are all inevitable for all of us, he said. I feel like I'm improving in the sense that I'm now recognising that they are just thoughts. I'm not associating myself with them and not believing them or attaching myself to them when I'm on the pitch, in the sense that if I've just made a bad pass, at the moment I feel like I'm quite able to let it go quite quickly. I feel that's come as a result of a lot of practice with meditation, speaking with my friend, life coach in India. A lot of stuff like this I've been doing pretty relentlessly for the last couple of years now, so it's not like it's been an easy process. There have been times when I've found it really tough. At the same time now, if we do lose a game, or if I do not have the best game, I feel like I'm able to process it a little bit better, a little bit more logically than I was before, probably a bit less emotionally as well. I just kind of see it from that perspective. I think that's what's helping me with the consistency side of things at the moment, because I'm kind of letting go of the last game and going into each game more open. The more experience you have, both good and bad, you naturally learn how to process things just going forward. I'm lucky in that I've played a lot of games for Celtic at quite a young age, so naturally I've had those high pressure situations. Hopefully I'll be able to adapt and learn. If you really reflect on what's happened, then you can process it better, as well as rather than just going through it without actually thinking what's happening along the way. It's what I'm trying to do. That article was by Ewan Payton.
From the Glasgow Times, Saturday the 9th of December, from the sports section, Clermont refuses to be drawn in on Cifuentes Rangers' red card. Article by sports writer Ewan Payton. Philippe Clermont refused to criticise referee Kevin Clancy following Jose Cifuentes' red card against Dundee today. The Ecuadorian midfielder was sent off following a VAR check after Dundee's striker, Amando Bakayoko. The former LAFC player was initially booked over the incident. However, after the intervention of VAR, Kevin Clancy opted to upgrade his decision to a red. Cifuentes did appear to catch the Dundee attacker high on the shin. While Clermont showed no anger over that decision, the Belgian did admit he was frustrated with Clancy over Todd Cantwell's disallowed goal during the first half. It was pulled back for a foul in the build-up, which meant the score stayed 3-1. I never speak about a referee's performance because they make mistakes, Clermont told BBC Sport Sound. We are in the training pitch every day to be our own referees, so are my assistants, so you cannot see everything. With the disallowed goal, I did not understand why the whistle was blown that fast. There was a clear view, so there was no foul, so it's better to let the play go on, and if there is a foul, VAR can always come back to that. It was not necessary to kill the game in that way. For us, it's a big difference. For every team it's a big difference, scoring a goal or not. You put in a lot of hard work for that. There was a moment that for 3 seconds I was really angry about. I am also a human being, and because of that I got a yellow card. I apologised to the referee after the game because I want to stay calm. That was a moment that I didn't understand. More broadly on the game, the 49-year-old added, I am very pleased because whoever saw the match saw a winning team on the pitch, whoever is playing. Everybody is working hard for the time to do the right things together, and with or without the ball in the way that we want to play football. It's a deserved victory. Even with 10 men, we created the best chances in the second half. You see, the team is growing to become a team to have the right mentality, to do the right things together, and that's an important thing. No, it's not the best I've seen my team play. In the first half as a whole, we had some really good moments, with the goals and other chances, but we also had some sloppy moments. Out of that comes this red card. Something we don't have to lose. We have to block it. Then we get the red card. Second half, for sure, there was a lot of good teamwork, but the boys have played in other games when the teamwork was also very good and have played good football. Rangers now face a huge 8 days in their season. They play Real Betis in Seville on Thursday evening, knowing they need a win to secure Europa League football after Christmas. It's then all focus on next Sunday as Rangers make the short trip to Hampden to take on Aberdeen in the Viaplay Cup final. Clermont is happy that more players in his squad are showing they can step up to the mark. He said, I think more and more players are competing. Players coming in, like Dujon, has the last 2 games, to positions that are not his best positions, so you can see the right mentality there. We're going to need everybody on Thursday, on Sunday and the weeks after. Everyone is speaking about these 2 games, but after that there's still a lot of games in the season. We're going to go really hard to get success in these 2 games, because already it can be something really special in the season. After that, there are also really important weeks and months to come. We have to get the team ready, so they're in the position where they understand what they have to do. In that way, it's getting better and better. I was really pleased with our discipline and the way that we attacked. In that article was written by Ewan Payton and read to you today by me, Ian. From the Glasgow Times, Saturday the 9th of December, from the sports section, Goldson Rangers omission versus Dundee explained by Clermont. Article by sports writer Ewan Payton. Philippe Clermont has moved to detail why Connor Goldson was not part of his Rangers starting lineup for this afternoon's match against Dundee. The Englishman was an obvious omission from the team when it was announced a short while before 2 p.m. John Souter and Liam Balogun were entrusted by the manager from the start, with Goldson on the bench.
and Clermont has revealed there is no injury concern for Goldson. He has simply earned a rest. The Belgian told Rangers TV, "Maybe the most unexpected change is that Connor is not starting, but, like I've said, 12 games in 37 days, it's impossible to play every game 90 minutes and play your top game. So, you have to take that into account. Johnny Suter is also doing a good job in training games, so to give Connor a breather in between these important games. Borna, Barisic is back after injury. He felt good, he showed quality in training and that's why he's back. Rabbi Matondo needs game time, and Ross McCausland is playing a lot, I don't want to burn him. It's a crucial thing. He's doing a really good job, a lot of effort for the team. Danny, Danilo, is out and Cyril Dessers is stepping in. He's the one showing the most fittest form from the strikers. Meanwhile, Danilo was yesterday ruled out until after the new year after sustaining a knee injury against Hearts. Now, the Brazilian has taken to social media to break his silence on the latest setback. He wrote, "Out of necessity, not able to do what I love for the most for a period of time. I will support the team from a distance for the upcoming games. For now, I need to focus to heal my knee and getting back as soon as possible. Thank you all for the concern. I will come back stronger." And that article was by Ewan Payton. From the Glasgow Times, Saturday the 9th of December, from the sports section. McInnes on belief Kilmarnock can hurt Celtic and Rangers. By sports writer Ewan Payton. Every team in Scotland can go into matches against Celtic and Rangers feeling they can get something out of it, insists Derek McInnes. The 52-year-old has guided his Kilmarnock side to victories over both the Glasgow pair back in August earlier this season. Both games finished 1-0 at Rugby Park, with Marley Watkins scoring the winner in a Viaplay Cup tie against Celtic, and Brad Lyons putting Rangers to the sword on the opening day of the league season. Brendan Rodgers' side visits Ayrshire tomorrow and will be seeking revenge on Kelly. But McInnes is confident his team can pull off another huge result on their own patch. He said, "I think most teams now playing against the Old Firm feel there's a chance against them. The league is so tight. Celtic and Rangers obviously have a huge advantage over everyone else in the league and that's probably never going to change. But I think teams now have got to go into games with them with a good mindset. Celtic and Rangers have both dropped points to different teams this season, and any sort of positive result against them is something most teams feel they can achieve. Celtic have got a lot of very good players in key positions. It's important they don't enjoy the game too much. Last Sunday was a reference for us, because St Johnstone were very good in the first half and Celtic struggled to get any sort of rhythm. It looked like a potential big upset, but Celtic turned up in the second half and showed how good they can be. You have to make it difficult for them, because they normally win when they enjoy the game. It helps with the messaging to the players. Physically, we always finish games strong. We got the last minute winner the other night, and it wasn't down to luck, we were finishing the game strong. Tactically, we'll set up to get a result, but the mental side is huge for a player. You can give them confidence from past results. It's what's between your ears that's important, and they need to genuinely believe they can get the result. Celtic can make you suffer at times. They can test your organisation and ability, but having that confidence is vitally important. The fact that the majority of our players on Sunday have beaten them already a couple of months ago is worth so much to me. It shows what can be done." And that article was by Ewan Payton. From the Glasgow Times, Saturday the 9th of December, from the sports section. Rangers 3, Dundee 1. Instant reaction to the burning issues. Article by Matthew Lindsay. Rangers warmed up for a huge week with a convincing 3-1 win over Dundee at Ibrox this afternoon, which extended Philip Clermont's unbeaten start as manager to 12 games and moved them to within 5 points of cinch Premiership leaders Celtic. Tony Docherty's side started the league encounter strongly, took the lead in the 5th minute when Amadou Bakayoko's netted at a Lyle Cameron corner and silenced the home crowd. But Clermont's team were 3-1 up at half-time thanks to a Cyril Dessers equaliser, a James Tavernier penalty which was given after a VAR check showed that Aidan Donnelly had pulled down Abdul Sima inside his own area, and a Sima header. Jose Cifuentes was ordered off in added on time at the end of the opening 45 minutes after referee Kevin Clancy had viewed a replay of his late challenge in Bakayoko and upgraded his yellow card to a red. Being reduced to 10 men, though, did not prevent Rangers from recording a comfortable triumph. Dujon Sterling came on for Todd Cantwell and Ross McCausland for Rabbi Matondo, and they saw out the victory. It will boost their confidence levels ahead of their Europa League meeting with Real Betis in Spain on Thursday and the Viaplay Cup final against Aberdeen at Hampden on Sunday. Defending Scottish champion Celtic can move 8 a clear again if they overcome Kilmarnock at Rugby Park this afternoon, but their nearest challengers are keeping up the heat on them. Here are 5 talking points from the encounter. Plus a challenge. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Clermont brought in no fewer than 5 new players for this outing. With games coming thick and fast during the festive period, and with an important European fixture and a cup final looming, it made perfect sense for him to freshen things up. The midweek win over Hearts at Tynecastle, too, had been mentally and physically draining for those involved. John Souter came in for Conor Gordon at centre-half. Borna Barisic took over from Ridvan Yilmaz, and Cifuentes was given the nod in midfield in the absence of Tom Lawrence. Elsewhere, Matondo and Dessers got their chance as Danilo and McCausland dropped out. Wood, though, performing such extensive surgery in his starting lineup, have a detrimental impact on performance levels and result in a precious points or points being shipped? The Rangers manager must have been cursing himself for making so many alterations as his team fell behind. Jack Butland kept the hosts in front after Cameron had burst through to the heart of his rearguard. The former England goalkeeper produced an instinctive one-handed save and pushed the attacking midfielder's attempt past his left post, but the visitors edged ahead from the resultant corner. Cameron floated the ball into the edge of the six-yard box. His teammate Donnelly nodded the delivery back to Bakayoko, and the forward kept his cool and volleyed beyond Butland. The tiny pocket of travelling supporters who were shoehorned into the corner in between the Broomland Road stand and the Sandy Jardine stand went mental, as did Clermont in his technical area. Ultimately, though, his faith in his squad was more than justified. He clearly has the strength and depth he requires to enjoy a successful campaign at home and abroad. If he brings in a couple of quality additions in January, it could make the title race very interesting indeed. Dessers' delight. The Nigerian striker has not, it is fair to say, always impressed onlookers since completing his £4.5 million transfer from Italian outfit Cremonese during the summer. But the 29-year-old, who did not get on the pitch in Gorgie on Wednesday night, proved his worth this afternoon. He showed great tenacity to pull Rangers' level. He followed up an effort which was blocked and rifled, with the help of a slight deflection, into the top right-hand corner. He worked hard thereafter. Dessers showed no little skill too. His back heel to Todd Cantwell on the halfway line drew gasps of admiration from the stands and sent the playmaker racing forward. The instigator of the attack haired upfield and tested Trevor Carson from distance. With Danilo looking set to be sidelined for some time with a knee injury which may require surgery, Clermont will have been encouraged by the player's contribution to an important result. See my strike rate. The Brighton loanee leapfrogged Matt O'Reilly of Celtic and went to the top of the Premiership scoring charts when he rose above his marker Donnelly at the Tavernier corner and nodded into the Dundee net. It was the 9th time the 23-year-old had been on target for the league this season, and the 13th occasion in total. Calls from supporters for Rangers to make the former Slavia Prague, Stoke and Angersman stay in Scotland permanently are sure to grow deafening in the coming weeks and months if he maintains his current strike rate. Stupid Cifuentes. This game provided the Ecuadorian internationalist, another who has some work to do to win around Rangers fans, with the ideal opportunity to show why former Ibrox manager Michael Beale had been eager to secure his services. The £1.5 million acquisition did not take it. His ordering off for a needless foul did not cost his side, who were leading 3-1 at that point, the win. But it could easily have been damaging. He has to be far smarter. He will now be banned for the Viaplay Cup final. His manager showed that he too can be a bit of a hothead. Clermont picked up a yellow card from Clancy in the second half for mouthing off at fourth official Alan Muir on the touchline after Barisic had been booked. Dundee danger. Losing Owen Beck, the only Liverpool left-back who's probably been Dundee's standout performer this term, to a minor groin strain was a serious blow to Doherty. Beck may be his best going forward, and his chances to do so in Govan would have been limited. Still, the Dens Park side were not quite the same without him. The Welsh defender would have provided them with an invaluable outball if he'd been fit and could have eased the pressure on their backline with runs upfield. However, the Championship champions showed why they had made such an impact in the top flight since returning, at times, and caused their opponent's rearguard more than a few difficulties. Luke McCowan got a shot away. Bakayoko went close with a glancing header after being supplied by Cameron, and Joe Shaughnessy had a goal disallowed for a foul in the build-up in the first half, and Cameron forced a save from Buckland in the second. Dundee will travel to Dingwall next Saturday to play Ross County, hopeful of getting back to winning ways despite this reverse. And that article was by Matthew Lindsay. From the Glasgow Times, Saturday the 9th of December, from the sports section. Robin Veldman leaves Queen's Park after Inverness defeat. Article by Martin McMillan. Robin Veldman has left Queen's Park just hours after the club's defeat to Inverness in the Scottish Championship. Spiders have not won a league match since August and currently sit 8th in the division. Veldman joins Queen's Park in June after Owen Coyle's departure, signing a 3-year deal. A club statement read, Queen's Park would advise that head coach Robin Veldman has left the club following this afternoon's match with Inverness Caledonian Thistle. Further information will be issued by the club in the coming days. It comes after Director of Football Marcin Bowker also left, joining Ajax last month. He had originally signed a 10-year deal with Queen's Park. And that article was by Martin McMillan. From the Glasgow Times, Saturday the 9th of December, from the sports section. The Lawrence Shanklin contract factor that gives Rangers advantage. Article by Stuart Wilson. Lee McCulloch insists Rangers should pay Hearts just £1 million for Lawrence Shanklin's services. The Light Blues have been linked with the Scotland international ahead of the January transfer window. Ibrox boss Philippe Clement recently shut down speculation about a potential move. And McCulloch, who coached Shanklin during his time at the Jambos, feels he would be an ideal signing for Rangers, particularly given the striker's contract situation. Speaking to PLZ Soccer, he said, his contract is up at the end of next year, season, so he's got a year and a half left. I think Hearts will want £2 million for him. I think Rangers should pay just over £1 million for him. Real Betis are set to be without 6 players for their crunch Europa League showdown with Rangers this week after they were hit with an injury crisis. Rangers need to either win in Spain in the final game in the group or match Sparta Prague's result against Aris Limassol in the other match to go through. Real Betis were already reeling after 80-time cap Portuguese midfielder Carvalho was ruled out until Christmas after picking up a hamstring injury. Argentina's World Cup winner Guido Rodriguez is also out for the game through suspension. And manager Manuel Pellegrini has revealed they have been hit with 4 other injuries for the visit from Philippe Clement's side on Thursday. They are also set to be without French playmaker Nabil Fekir, Spanish defender Marc Bartra, Chilean keeper Claudio Bravo, and Senegalese right-back Youssef Sabali. Pellegrini said, "We have a lot of problems with players injured. The only positive we can take is that we did test in German Pizelka after he felt his hamstring, but he is good to play. But we are missing important players in a vital period of the season for us." And that report was by Stuart Wilson. From the Glasgow Times, Saturday the 9th of December, from the sports section, Tierney opens up on difficult injury as he details Euro's excitement. Article by Aidan McDonald. Kieran Tierney has opened up on his difficult injury that has kept him out of action for 2 months. The Scotland international recently returned to action for Real Sociedad against Osasuna and is hoping to contribute for the rest of his loan spell. And he revealed the struggles after picking up the knock. Speaking to BBC Sport, he said, Injuries are never easy to accept, but when you've just joined a club, you're playing well, you're enjoying everything about it, you're happy, it's a little bit extra, more difficult to take. But once you do accept that, you get over it. Everyone at the club was brilliant with me to help me get over it, to help me stay positive, and the time flew by as well. Tierney also expressed his excitement at Scotland's Euro 2024 group. Steve Clarke's side have been drawn against Germany, Switzerland and Hungary. In the left-back field, the national team have learned their lessons from the previous tournament. We're hoping we can go there better equipped, he continued. I think the last Euros, first one in a while, really excited we got there. But there were times where we could have done better, been more composed, done different things. Decision-making. We've got great players and it'll be tough, but I think we need to believe we can go through. And that article was by Aidan McDonald. From the Glasgow Times, Sunday the 10th of December, sport. Football. Boyd and Sutton clash over a Celtic blatant handball incident. By sports writer David Irvin. Chris Boyd has claimed Kilmarnock were denied a clear penalty against Celtic. The former Rangers and Kelly striker furiously claimed referee David Monroe should have pointed to the spot for a handball in the first half at Rugby Park. Celtic had taken the lead through Matt O'Reilly in the first half before the handball incident. Danny Armstrong fired a fierce effort across goal where Joe Hart pushed clear. However, it only fell into the path of Corey Nambada, who fired low only to be denied by Johnson. The Canadian defender scarpered across the line before rolling his back and blocking the ball in the goal line. There were claims for a penalty with questions over how Johnson had blocked the ball, but Monroe was unmoved with appeals waved away. An incensed Boyd at halftime ranted, "I can't for the life of me work out why this is not given as a penalty kick. He's blatantly handballed that on the line. I know what we will say about supporting arms. His left arm is on the deck and he's lucky because he falls across there and it just hits the back of his arm. That is a penalty kick. VAR hasn't done its job because it's not even looked at it. He should maybe ask Joe Hart for his gloves for the second half." Scott Brown, also in punditry duty, suggested the VAR team had done their job before Sutton shut down Boyd's claims. The ex-Celtic striker stated, "If you want a balanced opinion, which you clearly haven't had at one time from one particular person, the ball which touches the upper portion of the player's arm will not be considered a handball. There we are, glad we put that one to bed." And that report is by David Irvin. From the Glasgow Times, Sunday the 10th of December, from the sports section. Brendan Rodgers names Celtic side to face Kilmarnock. By David Irvin. Brendan Rodgers has named his Celtic side to take on Kilmarnock. The Parkhead manager has made one change to his side from the 4-1 win over Hibs, with Nat Phillips coming in for Cameron Carter-Vickers. The US international is not included in the matchday squad after an injury setback in the match in midweek. Joe Hart starts in goal with a back four of Alistair Johnson, Phillips, Liam Scales and Greg Taylor, who makes his 150th appearance for Celtic. Tomoki Iwata plays in midfield alongside Callum McGregor and Matt O'Reilly, and it's a front three of O, Mikey Johnson and Lewis Palmer. Celtic 11. Hart, Johnson, Phillips, Scales, Taylor, Iwata, McGregor, O'Reilly, Johnson, Palmer, O. Subs, Bain, Kyogo, Yang, Turnbull, Naroki, Bernabei, Bernardo, Forrest, Wilson. Kilmarnock 11, Dennis, Mayo, Finlay, Dees, Ndaba, Armstrong, Polworth, Donnelly, Lyons, Kennedy, Vassell. Subs, O'Hara, Saunders, Davies, McKenzie, Murray, Warnock, Mackay Stephen, Dallas, Watkins. And that article was written by David Irvin. From the Glasgow Times, Sunday the 10th of December, from the sports section. Carter Vickers' Celtic injury update has returned timeline set by sports writer David Irvin. Brendan Rodgers has revealed Cameron Carter-Vickers could return to the Celtic starting lineup in midweek. The centre-back was forced off injured in the victory over Hibs on Wednesday night, and the blow sparked fears of a possible lengthy layoff for the crucial defender. However, a scan on a hamstring knock has come back pretty clear, with a quickfire return now likely. Rodgers confirmed Carter-Vickers missed out on the matchday squad to face Kilmarnock after stiffness around the knock. Nat Phillips starts in his place at the Rugby Park this afternoon. But Carter Vickers could come back into the squad for the match against Feyenoord on Wednesday. Asked for an update on Carter Vickers and the results of a scan on the injury, Rodgers told Sky Sports, "To be fair, it was pretty clear. But he has just felt a bit of stiffness around it, so we don't want to force it. He has obviously played a lot of games since he has come back from injury. Nat can come in and do a great job for us, and then hopefully Cam will be available in the midweek." And that article was by David Irvin. From the Glasgow Times, Sunday the 10th of December, from the sports section. Celtic 2 negative in loss at Kilmarnock, says Rodgers. Article by Gavin McCafferty. Celtic manager Brendan Rodgers admitted his side were too negative in their passing in the second half at Rugby Park after Kilmarnock came from behind to win 2-1. Matt O'Reilly netted from close range to earn Celtic a deserved half-time lead, but Kelly had missed two excellent chances and they created plenty more opportunities after the interval. They were eventually rewarded when Nat Phillips converted Bedline's cross into his own net in the 75th minute, and the home side took further confidence before Matty Kennedy finished off a counter-attack with 3 minutes left. Rodgers said, "I thought in the first half we were very good. We played at a good speed and created opportunities. We could maybe have been more than 1-0 up by half-time. But in the second half we never got started. You expect a wee bit of pressure for 10 or 15 minutes, which we weathered at set pieces and corners. But we never passed the ball. We were under a bit more pressure, sure, but you have to be resistant to that pressure. We weren't able to make passes to take us up the pitch, and that was the biggest disappointment of the second half. We couldn't sustain any attacking threat in the game. When you play Kilmarnock, it's quite a direct game, so you have to be able to win the first, second and third balls. But we didn't do that." Rodgers was angrier than he'd ever been as a manager when his side cheered against St Johnstone at half-time 7 days earlier, before coming back to win. But he was more measured in his response after a first-cinch Premiership defeat of the season. "The players know themselves," Rodgers said. "We spoke after the game about how this isn't how we want to do. In the second half, we played their game instead of playing our game. I thought we got rid of the ball in the second half instead of passing it, and there is a big difference. We ended up being too negative in our passing. If you play a team that's pressing right up against you there, you've got to pass that ball forward, because that forward pass eliminates pressure, and we weren't able, for some reason, to do that." Rodgers has now lost 10 domestic games over 2 spells as Celtic manager, and 4 of them have been at Rugby Park. "I thought the pitch was alright for an AstroTurf surface," he said. "When you get rain, it makes it slick, and it was actually good, but in the British game you have to have that adaptability." Kelly manager Derek McInnes had harsh words for his players at half-time in a bid to get them to the levels they showed when beating Celtic in the Viaplay Cup in August. "I had to give the players a wee reminder of the team we need to be, particularly at Rugby Park, the team we needed to be against Celtic," he said. Celtic came and dominated the ball and dictated the play. "They were almost playing with us, really.
with the ball. They were just kind of coaxing us into mistakes. Even when we got the ball, we looked unsure of ourselves. We had to be braver. We had to take a step forward, and I thought Stuart Finlay was immense at the back. We had to defend a lot of space behind us, and with that comes the element of risk. We had big performances second half when it was the total reverse of the first. It was everything I wanted from my team. I thought we passed up too many opportunities before we did score, and, thankfully, when we did get the goal, you could just sniff the victory. You could feel it. More importantly, my players felt it, and thankfully we got the second goal that I felt we deserved. I'm delighted we managed to turn it round, because coming from behind is always difficult when you play against a team like Celtic. And that article was by Gavin McCafferty. From the Glasgow Times, Sunday the 10th of December, from the sports section, Celtic winger Mikey Johnson responds to Brendan Rodgers' blunt barb by chief football writer Matthew Lindsay. Mikey Johnson has pledged to rise to the challenge laid down by his manager Brendan Rodgers and prove he deserves to be a first-team regular with Celtic in the coming weeks. Johnson started his first game for the Parkhead club since February last year in midweek when the Scottish champions took on Hibernian at home in the Cinch Premiership on Wednesday night. However, Rodgers admitted after the 4-1 triumph that the winger, who had performed brightly after coming on in a win over St Johnstone in Perth 3 days earlier, needs to do more to establish himself. The Republic of Ireland internationalist, who spent last season on loan at Vitória Guimarães in Portugal, insisted he had put his back injury behind him and can do so ahead of the league game against Kilmarnock at Rugby Park this afternoon. "People act as though I haven't actually played games for Celtic," he said, "but I have played nearly 100 games and I have played in 6 cup finals. I obviously need to be playing every single week and that's what I want to do. The manager is telling me to take the bull by the horns and hopefully I can do that." Johnson added, "People do like something that is new, such as new signings, but I am still just trying to prove to people that I can play here. I have been here for a while and people are probably saying that I've been here for this long and maybe I've not proven that, but I think I have in spells. It's very hard to win people over. The pressure is on me and I'm trying to unlock my potential the best I can. I went out on loan to a league in Portugal when I wanted to be here. I'm trying to take every step I can to fulfil my potential. It's not as though I'm not trying." Johnson won his first international cap for his adopted homeland on the back of his performances for Vitória last term and is confident his experiences in Portugal will help him at Celtic. "I don't think there is ever a comfort blanket at a club like Celtic," he said. "There is pressure here every single minute. When I went away on loan there was less pressure, but I learned a lot during that year. I did play in a team that did have a lot of pressure and put expectations on me. You grow up quickly when you go to a new country on your own, living away from home when it's a different language is tough. But it was always in the back of my head that I did want to come back here." And that report was by Matthew Lindsay. From the Glasgow Times, Sunday the 10th of December, from the sports section. Isco sends Rangers Europa League warning ahead of showdown. Article by Mark Walker. Real Betis star Isco has warned Rangers they will be blown away at their fortress ground in the final Europa League game this week. Villa Camont side need to win in Spain on Thursday to be certain of qualification, although a draw would be enough if Rangers match Sparta Prague score against Aris Limassol in the other game in the section. Betis will be missing 6 players against Rangers. Portuguese midfielder Carvalho is out due to the new year. And Argentina's World Cup winner Guido Rodriguez is also missing from the game through suspension. And they're also set to be without French playmaker Nabil Fekir, Spanish defender Mark Bartra, Chilean keeper Claudio Bravo, and Senegalese right-back Youssouf Sabali. But they were unlucky to only draw 1-1 against Real Madrid at home at the weekend and are unbeaten in their Estadio Benito Villamarín all season, as well as in La Liga home and away since September. Since losing to Rangers at Ibrox in the opening game of the group, they have only lost once in their next 17 games, and that was in the Europa League at Sparta Prague. And former Real Madrid hero, Isco, who won 5 Champions Leagues and 3 La Liga titles with his old club, reckons any side will find it extremely hard to beat them in Seville. He said, "At the Villamarín, the fans carry us in every single game we play. They have turned our ground into a fortress. When you have supporters like this, they drive us forward to play better, and are a large part of why we have done so well here this season. We never think we will lose here. We could have won against Real Madrid, but when you look at the quality of the opposition, it's not a bad result. And we have to play like this in the Europa League too, and in every match, if we want to achieve what we think we are capable of. I think it showed the calibre of this team, because we went a goal down to Real Madrid and took risks. We did that and got our reward. But that is what Manuel Pellegrini wants us to do. I'm very lucky he still has trust and faith in me." And that article was by Mark Walker. From the Glasgow Times, Sunday the 10th of December, from the sports section. Kilmarnock 2, Celtic 1. Host claim late comeback win. Report by Gavin McCafferty. Matty Kennedy scored a late winner as Kilmarnock inflicted a second defeat on Celtic this season. The Hoops started in dominant fashion in Ayrshire as they looked to avenge their Viaplay Cup loss, and Matt O'Reilly gave them a 33rd minute lead with his 9th goal of the season from close range. However, Kelly came very close either side of the goal, and they were eventually rewarded for their improvement when Nat Phillips turned Brad Lyne's cross into his own net in the 75th minute. Danny Armstrong then slipped Kennedy through as Kelly counter-attacked down the right-hand side, and the winger's effort went in off of Joe Hart. Brendan Rodgers had suffered his first domestic cup defeat as Celtic manager at Rugby Park in August, and the latest loss on the artificial surface was the first since Premiership defeat of his second spell in charge. It leaves Celtic 5 points ahead of Rangers, but with one more game played. Phillips started after Cameron Carter-Vickers failed to shake off a hamstring concern, but Rodgers otherwise retained the team that began Wednesday's 4-1 win over Hibernian. That made starts for Tommy Kitawata, Mikey Johnson and Oh Hyung-Yu. Rangers had told Johnson he had to do more following the midweek game. Johnson had a hand in the first goal and could have had an assist but for Oh's poor finishing. However, the winger's delivery was erratic during his 70 minutes on the park. Lyons and Liam Donnelly brushed off Knox to start for Kelly, who were pinned into their defensive third for the first 10 minutes. O'Reilly had 2 shots stopped, Callum McGregor's low cross just evaded Johnson, and O had a header saved. Celtic continued to create chances. O volleyed over after Liam Scales' ball over the top, and the South Korean should have converted Johnson's low cross before Lewis Palma hit the post from a tight angle. Kelly should also have scored from their first chance. Lyons' cross found Armstrong at the back post, but the winger hit the junction of post and bar from 6 yards. Celtic were ahead within a minute. McGregor took 3 players out of the game when he turned to his right foot 20 yards out and forced Will Dennis down to his left with a shot. The goalkeeper could only parry, and O'Reilly was on hand to convert the rebound. The action continued as Celtic survived a double chance moments later. Hart got down well to deny Armstrong, and Alistair Johnson threw himself at Corey Nombada's follow-up to block what looked a certain goal. The opening stages of the second half were just as one-sided as the first, but this time in the home team's favour. Hart denied Nombada, and Robbie Dees headed just wide amid sustained aerial pressure, before the Celtic goalkeeper got down to clutch Armstrong's curling effort. O'Reilly and Palma threatened after Celtic counter-attacks as the incessant rain got heavier and Kilmarnock appeared to have lost their cutting edge, but they took a major lift from the equaliser. Stuart Finlay had an effort saved after another ball into the box and substitute Marley Watkins scooped just over from a better chance before Kennedy found the net in the 87th minute. Kennedy brought on Kyogo Furuhashi, and Dennis pulled off an excellent stop from the Japan striker 90 seconds after Kennedy's goal. The home fans howled with derision when the fourth official signalled there would be 8 minutes of stoppage time, but Kelly comfortably saw them out. And that match report was by Gavin McCafferty. From the Glasgow Times, Sunday the 10th of December, from the sports section, women stick to knitting, maybe Barton should stick to assaulting folk, by sports writer Susan Egglestaff. Thank goodness we women have knitting and netball. Maybe if we've got a bit of time left after that, we could do a bit of cooking and cleaning. Because God forbid any of us venture anywhere near football. Actually, it's not football in general that women should be staying away from, it's specifically men's football. Because we all know, in 2023, that it's the women should be doing the ironing while the men deal with the football. And never the twain shall meet. This is, at least, the view of the ever-intelligent Joey Barton. Earlier this week, Barton thought it was a good idea to share the dirge that flows through his brain with the world. Not many others ever think this is a good idea when it comes to Barton, but he did, and that's all that matters. The 41-year-old posted on X, "Any man who listens to women commentary or co-commentaries are heads testing, hashtag stick to your own game." Before following that up the next morning with another post stating, "Stand by everything I've said on women commentating and co-coms on the men's football. Like me talking about knitting or netball? Way out of my comfort zone. Some of the men are bad enough. We have gone too far. You cannot watch a game now without hearing the nonsense. Any man who says otherwise is an absolute fart parcel." Barton was, in his day, a good footballer, but he was certainly never a great footballer. 5 years and 130 appearances for Manchester City was the highlight, with that spell followed by stints at Newcastle United, QPR, Marseille, Burnley and Rangers. It is, by any estimation, a decent footballing career. But it's nothing more than that. It's certainly not the kind of career that sets the heather on fire. Barton's managerial career has been even less impressive. 3 years at Fleetwood Town ended with the club in 10th place in League One. He was then, in February 2021, appointed manager of Bristol Rovers, with Barton and his side relegated to League Two just a few months later. His spell at Bristol Rovers ended in October, with the team a less than impressive 16th in the league. It's maybe the extra time on his hands due to his unemployment that's afforded Barton headspace to formulate these dazzling views about women being entirely unqualified to talk about anything to do with men's football. By Barton's reckoning, only the most decorated, successful male footballer should ever grace our television screens. Make no mistake, there's something extremely enlightening about a Roy Keane or Gary Neville or a Jamie Carragher commenting on the current state of football. But it's such a strange take that only those who have played at the same level as that on which they are commenting should be permitted. Does that mean only Messi can comment on Ronaldo, and vice versa? Or only those who have won the Champions League should dare to pass an opinion on the Champions League final? Everyone, even those who have watched the bare minimum of football, know that having been a professional footballer is not enough to ensure you'll be a good, or even an okay, commentator or pundit. For every decent male ex-professional footballer who is commenting on a game, there's 5, 10, maybe even 20, who are not particularly good, or worse, are absolute dross. Yes, having played at the exact level in which you are commenting can potentially be an advantage, but only if you use that past experience in a productive way. Too often, male ex-players rely solely on having played football at a good level, and forfeit any attempt to do research, or preparation on the game on which they are covering. Indeed, the very same evening on which Barton sent his post out on social media, Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp accused Amazon Prime presenter Marcus Buckland of being completely ignorant after Buckland made a jibe about the early kick-off times in the Premier League. It's just the most recent example in a long, long line of examples of male presenters being more than capable of being as dreadful as anyone else can be. People are more than entitled to dislike whichever commentator they choose. There is clearly no way that any commentator or pundit is going to suit everyone's taste. That's the nature of the beast and entirely legitimate. But to declare one should form an opinion purely based on the gender of the speaker rather than any of their analysis is astonishing. Don't try to tell me that a woman who's played football at the highest level can't learn the nuances of men's football in the same way that a man who's played football below the very highest level can learn those same nuances. By his own standards, Barton is entirely unqualified to comment on the upper echelons of football, having never, as either a player or a manager, won a top-level trophy. How can anyone be expected to respect anything that comes out of his mouth when it comes to top-level football? Perhaps, instead, Barton is better qualified to talk about carrying out violent attacks, having twice been convicted of doing so. That the overwhelming response to Barton's comments was derision is encouraging. The most oft-mentioned woman to dispute Barton's opinion was the former Lioness, Alex Scott, who, by many people's estimation, is a top-class presenter and pundit. She may be female, but she's played at the very highest level in the women's game for over a decade and, to boot, has a degree in professional sports writing and broadcasting. There is, in most quarters, a recognition that women can be just as valuable, interesting and insightful as football pundits or co-commentators as men. But the fact we're still having to argue this with some, including a clown like Barton, is a profoundly depressing state of affairs. And that piece was written by Susan Egglestaff. From the Glasgow Times, Monday the 11th of December, from the sports section. Celtic hero Neil Lennon's son makes professional debut at age 17. By Aidan MacDonald. Neil Lennon's son Gallagher made his professional debut at the weekend, turning out for a Lowland League side Linlithgow Rose against Gretna. The 17-year-old is on loan from St Mirren and came off the bench during the 5-0 victory. Speaking to the Scottish Sun, he said, "I thought from the first whistle we were outstanding. All the boys played with a very high intensity. The tempo was good. We passed the ball well and it was good to score a load of goals and keep the clean sheet as well." He added, "I'm loving it, to be fair. It's a really good club. I love the stadium and the boys around it as well. Herdy and John, they've all been top with me, made me feel welcome. It's been brilliant, really good." Lennon was previously on the books of Partick Thistle and earned a deal with St Mirren last summer after a successful trial. He has also been capped by Northern Ireland at the under-19 level. And that article was by Aidan MacDonald. From the Glasgow Times, Monday the 11th of December, from the sports section, Rangers vs Dundee VAR incidents analysed as former ref gives verdict. Article by Stuart Olson. Former referee Des Roach has given his verdict on the VAR incidents during Rangers' victory over Dundee. The Light Blues ran out 3-1 winners against the Dens Park side, but the game once again involved a couple of controversial VAR decisions. Firstly, a penalty was awarded to the hosts after Aaron Donnelly was judged to have fouled Abdullah Sima in the box. Kevin Clancy let play go originally before being advised to take a second look. Then, before half-time, Jose Cifuentes was eventually red-carded for a late tackle on Bakayoko, which Clancy had initially issued a yellow card for. And Roche feels the still images used had both a positive and negative effect on the fixture. Speaking to Elissimo, he said, "I don't think Kevin missed it. Not one player was looking for a penalty. It was only when he saw a still image of the situation that he was forced into making the decision, which is what Tony Docherty said after the game. Tony said that Sima was pulling Aaron Donnelly's shirt too, but that doesn't seem to be in the pictures that Kevin Clancy saw. Again, stills can paint a horrible picture, and that's what happened with Jose Cifuentes' challenge and Amadou Bakayoko. I don't think for a minute he was trying to stamp on him, and I was quite happy with the yellow card. But when it slowed down and then stopped, it looked so bad, and Kevin has to change the card to a red. We see it in Europe too, with the Daisy Maeda red card in Madrid. In normal time, it looks like a yellow card, but when it slowed down, it looks so much worse." And that article was by Stuart Wilson.
That concludes this week's edition of the Glasgow Times Sports Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at Kieran Review, and to tell your friends about our service.